The Football Kickoff.
With Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.
All right, we are live. Enda is here with me in studio. Simon Cox is with us as well. And there's only one place that we can start this morning, gentlemen. Ralf Rangnick has done his first press conference. And, Simon, funnily enough, Ralf Rangnick was asked, you know, what's going to happen in the summer? And he was like, well, a couple of times in the past when I've come in short term, I've been asked to recommend a manager and I've recommended myself. And it's worked out before at Leipzig. I for one, am actually genuinely surprised. I thought he was like, no, I'm going to fade into the background. I'm going to be the guiding hand, the puppeteer. He's like, yeah, maybe I will take this job. Are you surprised at all?
Well, I guess it would depend on how well he does, though. I mean, if he has a terrible 6.5 months, then I can't imagine anybody really wants him to have the job. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But yeah, he's got a tough job ahead of him. So we'll just see how he does.
He's backing himself anyway. That's fair to say that if there is a number one fan in the Ralf Rangnick fan club, it is Ralf Rangnick. And fair play to him, because that's what you need in football management, right?
Absolutely. He believes in himself. He believes what he brings to a team and how he can produce results and make a team and make a club better. So if there's anyone, I guess it's him. And if it's not him, he gets to choose who the next one is.
Yeah, so it'll be a puppet master for Amanda. You were not surprised by this. You thought, actually, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, shock and awe that a manager would want the biggest job in world football with an unlimited budget. I mean, it was clear and obvious. Like, it seems to me that either United have had this master plan all along and they've just kept it quiet from everybody for the last year, or they happen to stumble upon a very happy accident in interviewing Ralf Rangnick, being surprised how good he was, and then suddenly, oh, Ralf, if you want to take this job after 6 months, I mean, that's up to you. We'll leave that up to you. But It's up to you. You can take it.
In fairness, Simon, you make a good point. If he stinks the joint out, it's not even going to be an option. But if he does well, suddenly it's back on the table. And I suspect that that's exactly the right thing from Manchester United's perspective. They're not quite sure about changing the philosophy of the club and buying into gegenpressing and all that that comes with in terms of recruitment and the science that he brings. But if it works and if it's showing signs of progress, then they can be all in.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at what his interview would have been with the likes of Ed Woodward and whoever else he met. He would have put in place potential targets for the summer. You know, if he goes and does really well, he would have put in his structure of what he wants for next year. He wouldn't just be like, oh, you know, I'm here for 6.5 months. I'll try and do the best I can before moving upstairs for 2 years. You know, he would have gone about his business. He would have done proper due diligence on the whole football club, the team, who he wants to bring in, who he wants to get rid of. And listen, if United start doing really well, then he's definitely someone that can stay there for a little while longer than 6.5 months in the dugout.
Who are the big beneficiaries in terms of the actual playing staff, in your view? Again, we won't know, I think, for a couple of weeks. I think he's going to give everybody an opportunity over the next couple of weeks to see how they will fit into his system. So we shouldn't be too surprised if there are some random selections over the next few games in particular. But in the kind of medium term, who are going to be the big beneficiaries, in your view, at this point, Simon?
Well, I think it will obviously be the likes of this sort of younger generation of players, the Rashfords, the Greenwoods, the Sanchos. I think with this playing style that Rangnick likes to implement, he likes that tough press, that counter press. So you have to be fit, and it's a very young person's game, I think, to do that. So he has to try and get those three buying into it. But you can't sort of take out the Ronaldos of the world. So it's just how he fits into that high pressing, high energy game that he want to implement. So I think it will just be the three three younger lads, the Greenwood, Rashford and Sancho's, the ones who will probably benefit most.
Yeah, and what's your view on this?
Yeah, I think if you look back at Rangnick's sort of history, recent history, I don't think Ronaldo's actually going to drop out. I think he will build the team around Ronaldo to get him in the right positions and almost have everyone else work as pawns for this. But I think one player that we should keep an eye on over the next couple of weeks is Amad Diallo, who has come from Atalanta. He was one of the most sought-after teenagers in world football. Real Madrid wanted him, Barcelona wanted him, everybody wanted him. He's done his education at Atalanta, who play a high-intensity, high-pressing game. He knows how to do it. and he is back at the club now after spending a short period on loan. So he was very sharp in the couple of games that he got last year in the Europa League. And I think he will be one of these players that we might see a surprise, just throw him in and see how he does situation. The question is how quickly these players can adapt. Jadon Sancho, we know, knows how to play this sort of high-intensity game that Rangnick wants to play because he did it at Dortmund. Rashford is still questionable for me, whether he has the ability to do it, whether he has the maybe the attitude to do it. Like, there is an argument to be made. Rashford was not one of the most hard-working players under Solskjaer, so he's still questionable for me. The likes of Mason Greenwood will benefit massively from this because he will finally learn how to press, because I think Mason Greenwood has shown really good raw potential, but he needs to be nurtured, and Rangnick is the guy to do it.
Okay, we did put up a flash poll before we came on air for this. The question was, who's going to be the Manchester United manager in September 2022? At the moment, Rangnick is slightly ahead of Pochettino, 33% basically. So one third of respondents believe Rangnick's going to get it. Pochettino's on 32%, Brendan Rodgers on just 7%, and someone else, another, is on 28%.
Voted for that as well.
Who would you have gone for?
I went for Poch. Right. I just think that the way that he'll finish his tenure at PSG, and then he'll want to come back to the UK, and then he'll get the backing of Rangnick, and I think he plays a similar style of football that he'll want to show that he can do it at one of the biggest clubs in the world, and he'll try and bring success back to United. I think that will be the sort of merry-go-round, the process that United are going to go down, I think.
We were talking about this a little bit earlier on. If you are one of those super managers who believes in your style and your philosophy and it's going to bring success, at the moment, the Manchester United job must be one of the best jobs because they're starved for success. So if you deliver success, you will be there for life, and they're endlessly wealthy. They have spent an absolute ton of cash on players. They've just spent it stupidly in recent seasons, and they've overpaid players and they've given players bad contracts. If you can come in and fix any of that, which it seems like, you know, any kind of the super manager should be able to do, it's actually the best and most interesting job at the moment in many respects.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at it as where they are at the minute as a club and as a team. Anyone who comes in and sort of produces better results looks $1 million. So, you know, it's not a club that's never going to back their manager either. So it's not like you're like an Arsenal where you don't have a lot of money to spend or as much
Chelsea.
As
Chelsea. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to have a game plan. You have to have the right person, right recruitment coming in. And once you have that, United will start climbing the table, will start being back to where they were. It's going to take a little bit of time, but that's, I guess, the reason why, you know, if Rangnick isn't going to be the manager for the long term, he goes upstairs and he puts that plan in place.
Here's my wild prediction. I think Fred is going to have a big role to play. I think that in the last couple of weeks, Carrick has moved Fred a little bit forward. They've taken a little bit of the defence responsibilities off him, and as a result, he started to be a kind of key trigger for the press. And I thought he played okay in the last couple of games. He's been responsible for good stuff as opposed to, highlight reel of Fred. It's some kind of catastrophic error that has led to a goal.
Here's the thing about Fred.
Fred, not bad, is my hot take.
If you don't expect him to control the game, which he has been asked to do, he's actually a pretty good player. If you use him as a breaker-upper and just get the ball, pass it to someone who is better than you, then Fred is actually a pretty all right player.
I think
was a stage last night where Martinelli ran straight through the United defence, and I heard on a different podcast that the United tactical director, whoever it is, conducts the tactics, is in the ear of Mike Carrick or the bench, said that Fred should have taken him out. That was his analysis of the situation, which is true. Fred does and is not cynical at the right times. He's bad at tackling at the right at the wrong times, but he's not cynical at the right times. That's one of the issues with him.
All right. Well, again, it's going to be very interesting to see who makes the cut and who doesn't. Bruno played well last night, so maybe he's back in the good books because the new manager's come along and he's going to have that, I better prove myself to these guys. De Gea last night, like, all over Michael Carrick. That was interesting. It was like, maybe they all knew that that maybe he told them before the game he was
he
leaving?
He said he told them after the game.
Okay.
Which is interesting. But Bruno also gave him a big hug after the game. So did Fred.
It looked like they all knew. Yeah. Okay. So we're not buying what they're telling us. Right. Let's talk briefly. That game is on Sunday. Manchester United against Crystal Palace. Kickoff is 2 o'clock. It's live and off the ball on News Talk. It's going to be a big letdown if Palace come and spoil the party, Simon. But Palace's recent form hasn't been great. They started the season really well. I was a bit surprised how good Patrick Vieira was proving to be as a manager, but there's just a little sticky patch that they're having at the moment. Some decisions are going against them. The team are losing a bit of shape. What's your take on what's going to happen in this game?
Yeah, I think I think that United will end up winning this one. I think, as you said, Palace is a little bit form in a. It's just fluctuating a little bit, 2 wins from the last 6 games. So, listen, I was pleasantly surprised about how good Vieira's been or start the season. He changed their playing style from what Roy Hodgson had Palace being for a long time of hard to beat. They're a lot more exciting going forward now. Obviously, Conor Gallagher's been probably their highlight this year. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I think it'll be one that... Vieira will want to go into the game and try and get one over, obviously being ex-Arsenal, Manchester United sort of rivalry. But I just see United winning this one.
Yeah, it's hard to know. The home form, terrible for a whole year. And then is last night a turning point?
No.
Why not?
You can't just turn things around.
Well, the atmosphere was class.
The atmosphere was good, but the thing about it is
you can't. That's how turnarounds happen.
I don't know. It just doesn't
get rid of a bad manager, replace him with a good manager. That's turnaround.
I'm not having this idea that suddenly
it took Thomas Tuchel 1 training session. Apparently,
click your fingers, United are master gegenpressers. We've seen from Klopp coming in, we've seen from Pep coming in that. This does not happen overnight. They might win because they're better. They beat Arsenal because they just simply had better players on the pitch. They didn't beat them because they were better tactically. They beat them because they had Ronaldo on the pitch. They had Bruno Fernandes on the pitch. And Arsenal had opposing Aubameyang, who is not the Aubameyang of a couple of years ago. Whereas Crystal Palace have some very good players going forward. And on the break, which United are terrible at defending, Palace are really good. So that's
so you're
where
saying another
3-2. I think it will not be as comfortable a United victory as people might think. I think it could be a draw.
All right, okay. That's your prediction for that one. Let's run through the rest of the fixtures. On Saturday, the 12:30 kickoff, West Ham versus Chelsea is live on BT Sports. At 5:30, Watford versus Man City is live on Sky Sports. Villa versus Leicester is the Sunday game at 4:30. That's live on Sky Sports and on Off the Ball. And on Monday, the Monday evening kickoff is going to be Everton versus Arsenal. A massive, massive game for Rafa Benitez at 8 o'clock. And that one is live on Sky Sports. Let's talk West Ham and Chelsea. At what point, Simon, do we think the wheels come off for West Ham? Or are West Ham legitimately now a top 6 team and we just have to get used to that?
Well, when did you think that Leicester were going to lose the league when they went on to win it? So, I mean, it just... They're just in that run of form, aren't they? So, for me, is David Moyes up there with the manager of the season so far? Possibly. I just think they look a real strong outfit at the minute. Got good partnerships all over the pitch of Zouma and Dawson at the back, and it's Antonio, Banrama and Bowen up top are a threat no matter who they play. So, but Chelsea... only conceded 6 goals in the league this year, which is the lowest. So, I mean, it'll be I don't think it'll be as a foregone conclusion as probably people think that Chelsea would win this one. I think this will be a tight one. Obviously, London derby as well, West Ham atmosphere. Yeah, I think it'll be this could be a draw, this one, I think.
We're trying to tease out where Chelsea are at the moment. And so many of their defenders are scoring goals. And at the moment, I think Reece James is still their top scorer. But... you know, Lukaku's missed loads of time. So are they a team who just needs Lukaku to come in and find form and then all of a sudden they'll shoot into comfortable 2-0 and 3-0 wins? Or are they the type of side who are actually going to give opportunities to other teams? And I'm not just talking good teams like West Ham, but like we saw Burnley be able to come back from behind against Chelsea. We saw them struggle during the week as well. What's the reality of where Chelsea are at the moment in terms of their form?
I think they've got strength and depth first and foremost. You know, they're able to change a few players during the week and still come out winners, but against probably a poor Watford team. but they'll play up against, they do, I think they do need Lukaku. I think they need that focal point. And when he gets back into full fitness and he gets back introduced to from the start, I think he'll start firing goals, and then they might start winning more comfortably. But listen, when he's not in the pitch and you can score goals from all over the pitch, I think it's definitely a recipe for success for them.
Yeah, like they're not behind, obviously they're literally not behind City and Liverpool, but their quality of the recent form since the international break, you would definitely say that City and Liverpool have kicked on. Chelsea are still grinding out results. Is that one of those, like, later on in the season we look back and go, they managed to weather a bit of a period where they weren't playing brilliantly and they dealt with what they needed to and they got through, and that's the hallmark of a tight winning side? Or are there any concerns about the fact that they're stuttering a little bit in games that you would expect them not to stutter?
I don't know. I think they the fact that they can score goals from all over the pitch, it says that they're a good side. And but the fact is that your right wing back is your leading goal scorer probably says that they need to get their strikers and probably forward players scoring more goals. So, like I say, I think get Lukaku back and get that focal point in the team, which allows them to play a little bit more direct into him at times if they need to, and then he'll be able to probably win them the games that they're probably stuttering at right now.
Yeah, I think what's important about Chelsea, though, to note is that they've conceded 6 goals this year. So even if they're not scoring all that many, they're not conceding any, if at all. So you're looking at the teams, and eventually, like, against the likes of City and Liverpool and Arsenal, it's probably not going to be as you know, as dominant as they want. But against other teams, they're good enough to do without Lukaku. They're like, if they're not conceding goals, they eventually will break through the weaker side. So, like, even the likes of Juventus, they beat Juventus 4-0, and they had Trevor Shabala starting right back. They had Ziyech, Hudson-Odoi, and Pulisic starting up front. They won 4-0. So eventually, they were strong enough to weather.
You're saying they're grand.
Yeah, I think they're fine.
Let's not worry about them.
Essentially, okay. Yeah. Okay. Once Lukaku comes back, I think they'll be absolutely grand, and they're top of the table for a reason.
I think it's a big test for West Ham at the moment. Obviously, they conceded in the 94th minute to an overhead bicycle kick against Brighton at the weekend, and that was a big letdown for them, because that was just a little bit of daylight between them and Arsenal and even Spurs, who obviously won last night, and Manchester United, who won last night as well. It was just kind of keeping everybody at arm's length, and so that race for fourth is going to be really fascinating as the season progresses. So games like this against the very best team in the league at the moment, if you can get a point, that's a massive victory for them.
Yeah, well, like 1-1 for United was a big result, and like Chelsea were all over them for that game. So it's really, like, a lot of the title challenges you'll see is just not losing these games. So, I mean, if you can get through this period in December, which is always the hardest part, then I think Chelsea...
Even a top four challenge, I mean, for West Ham's perspective. Okay, so yeah. Man City against Watford. Watford have been really good to watch since Ranieri arrived. Maybe they were before, maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention, Simon, but he's turned them into a team who are very capable of scoring goals, and they look a little bit more solid at the back than they were earlier on, and it feels like they're a team who should be able to kick on and get to safety. But they're just in a run of very difficult fixtures at the moment. They obviously had Chelsea midweek, and they've got Man City, who were sensational against Villa in periods. So I don't expect Watford to do anything in this game, but I mean, they're such a wild team, it's hard to know.
Yeah, I mean, one thing Watford are really good at, and what they do have, even though Ismaïla Sarr is out, is they do have a lot of pace in their team. So King and Dennis, obviously, they're two leading goal scorers. But on the break, they're rapid. You know, they can hurt. And, you know, one thing that will happen in this game is that City will dominate possession. And one thing that Watford are good at is on the break. So it could be a case of being hard to beat. And normally, predominantly with Italian managers, they're pretty good defensively. So, you know, I can see this being a Watford having 25-26% possession and then hitting on the counter-attack and nicking one like they did against Chelsea with Dennis. So, I mean, they have been pretty good going forward. 19 goals scored, but it's just 26 goals conceded. So that's the one thing that they have to shore up, and hopefully they can, you know, they can start climbing the table. I think they'll be fine. I don't see them really being down there at the end. I just think that if they can tighten up that defence, they'll be fine.
Ireland applied to be the 33rd team. The absolute joy and laughter the French took out of that. It's just like, who are these guys? How can that happen?
OTB AM live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
I watched a good bit of the City Villa game, almost all of it. I managed to miss the Bernardo Silva goal live, stupidly flicking over to watch the bloody Merseyside derby. But anyway, they're amazing at the moment. They're like, the chances that they create, it's just that Gabriel Jesus is a tiny step below world class when it comes to being an out and out number nine or a finisher. And you do feel if they get Haaland, then they're going to be unstoppable at a global level. But they don't have him at the moment. And so they have to manufacture chances and they have to score great goals. So that's my one concern about the City team, is that they're still just, there's just a little kink in the matrix that prevents them from absolutely killing teams, even when they do have 70% possession and 14 chances and 10 shots on target.
I still think they need that number nine, though. As much as they're doing okay with, or doing really well with the false nine, same with Chelsea, that focal point, that's someone who can just be the match winner when they're not playing well, or they come up against a team who very hard to beat. Just think that they need that number nine. They need that, if it's Haaland, if it's Harry Kane, if it's...
Could it be Ferran Torres? They're talking about selling Torres already. Torres' agent is obviously out, or Barcelona are out saying, oh no, we've got loads of money, don't worry about us, we're grand. I don't know what's going on there, because it looked like, I thought, he was a player during the Euros when he got his... he was given an opportunity that he could actually do this, but obviously they've had him around the club long enough, they're like, I'm not sure. He's only 21.
Yeah, but did not get injured as well, and then he's just not sort of found that position back in the team. Obviously, the fact that they've got that team shape of the false nine is just, I don't know, it doesn't seem like he fits at the minute, which is a bit of a shame, because I think he's a very capable player, and listen, when you're in a City team, you'd like to think you're a good player. So, I didn't see the game, but I saw the goals, especially the Bernardo Silva one. I mean, that's something special. So his resurgence into the team, obviously with the likes of Grealish coming in the summer, it looked like he was out the door, but he's knuckled down and got himself in the team, and he's now pretty much irreplaceable there.
Yeah, I think it's the mystery of Pep, though, because he almost keeps the players on their toes. Like, Ferran Torres was one of City's best players at the start of the season, and suddenly he's just out of the team and hasn't been back in since. And it's the same with the likes of, like, Bernardo Silva, who dropped out of the side, and people were like, oh, maybe he's not at this level anymore. Suddenly he's the best player at City. Sterling's coming back into the side. Sterling, I think it's just Pep's management style. But do you think...
Mahrez as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Sensational at the moment.
Do you think this is, like, almost an ego trip for Pep Guardiola at the minute? Because if he sits back, if he wins this league, he can say, everyone said I couldn't do it. Everyone said I couldn't win the league without a striker. Had to go spend 90 million on Haaland or 120 on Harry Kane. I just won the Premier League without a striker. I'm the best manager of all time.
Well, I don't know, because I think that they tried to sign Harry Kane and they couldn't get him. And they, for whatever reason, they definitely looked like they were trying to sign Ronaldo. So I'm not sure. I don't know if it's just an ego trip. And I think he desperately wants that, because if he wins the league, he's like, yeah, great, I won the league. But he wants to win the Champions League. That's what he wants.
That's where that number nine will come in for him. If they get it in January, if they get whoever they want to get in January, I think that's where they'll go to the next level.
But it feels like they do need it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
I've just noticed that casually over your right shoulder there are three match balls. Just, you know, as you do whenever you're on Zoom, you're just going to make sure that it's four. Sorry. What are the hat tricks?
It's five. There's one down the bottom
five.
As well.
All right, cool. What are the five hat tricks?
I got three in League One, Scunthorpe. God, you don't put me on pressure.
There you go.
Hartlepool away, Scunthorpe away, and who's that one? Northampton away.
Very good.
This one here was Cardiff in the FA Cup, and that one was Portsmouth.
Right. Portsmouth in the Championship or in the Premier League?
League One.
All right, very good, very good.
Yeah,
it's good to have those. We have our awards here. That's that's our equivalent.
Yeah, I just tried to remember what, you know, I was actually not bad.
No harm. Villa against Leicester. This is 4:30 on Sunday. There's narrative around this one. Narrative of go-go. And what are you calling this one?
I don't know. I haven't settled on a name yet. I'm in between like the Abandoners Derby or the Fraudulent Derby. I'm not sure which one you want to go with. Depends who, what teams you support. But I don't know. There was a lot of cardboard cutouts of Steven Gerrard punched and set alight after he left Rangers. So it's a very interesting derby. We'll put it that way. There'll be a lot of Scottish fans watching this game, surprisingly.
Simon, I should let you know that Enda is a dyed-in-the-wool Celtic fan and hates both of these managers with the same amount of passion. So just so that you're aware of the context.
I've come full circle on Brendan Rodgers. It's all right.
Yeah, and now you love CBG, do you? Now that he's gone.
Geez, no. Come on.
Well, I'm a Liverpool fan, so I don't mind both of them.
Well, I've been quite impressed so far with Steven Gerrard. Like, it's very early days, but he's decided he's going to go with the back four. He's picked the best back four that he has, and he's given them very clear instructions. Get back to doing what you were doing for the last 18 months when things were going well for you. He's given some fringe players an opportunity. You know, he's given the kids an opportunity. And he's not trying to force Danny Ings into the team with Ollie Watkins. Now, he might have been a bit lucky because I think Ings is injured at the moment. But it's like, this is how we're going to play. This is our identity. You go off and you do what you're doing. And it's very early days, right? It's three games in. And they got absolutely battered by City. But they didn't get battered on the scoreboard, which again is the type of thing that was happening to them a little bit earlier in the year. So I'm relatively positive as a Villa fan about what CVG is doing. What's your early impression so far, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, I like him. I think he's, from what he did up at Rangers, he's very hard to beat. He doesn't concede many goals. So I think throughout time, he'll get Villa being a lot harder to beat. I just think that they do need to get back to what they were early stages of Dean Smith. I think with the likes of, because I thought Tyrone Mings wasn't playing well, and then all of a sudden Gerrard comes in, he scores his goal, and you think, oh, that just lifts his ability again. I like what he's doing. I think he'll get them safe and sound, no problem. They'll stay in the league, and then he'll build. He'll bring one or two in January, but then I think he'll build for the summer. I think what he and who he brings in the summer will be we'll see what they can produce next season.
They're 3 points behind Leicester at this stage of the season, which, you know, if you'd given Villa fans at the start of the season, they would have been like, yeah, we'll take 3 points behind Leicester. Absolutely. Turns out Leicester have had a tricky up and down. Maybe Brendan Rodgers was a little bit distracted by all of the, he says he wasn't, is it possible?
Well, it also could be down to the fact that the players are heartbroken from being in the top four for 2 years and still not getting Champions League football. Could have something to do with that. Madison's starting to get back into form as well, so you'll see Leicester start to pick up a little bit as well. Just on Steven Gerrard, I should mention that when he did get the job, or when he was linked with the job, I looked at the Aston Villa squad, and based on what he was doing with Rangers, I was like, that's a perfectly suited team to Steven Gerrard's football, or Michael Beale's football, whoever you want to give the credit to. Good wingers.
Give it one hand, take away with the other.
Matty Cash and Matt Target, you know, two good wing backs. Midfield of Douglas Luiz and John McGinn, two pawns that are really hardworking, but also good at driving forward the ball. John McGinn's a really good football, underrated, I think. And then you've got players with high intensity up front who are strong, in Ollie Watkins and the likes of Buendia, then to sort of link it all together. I think if he can get the side working the same way that he had Rangers working. No, it did take him about 4 or 5 months to get that to work for him, so it could take the same with this. He's got a good makings of the squad. Leon Bailey, you know, if he gets up to the player that people have been rating him as, I think I genuinely do think that Aston Villa will have a good coaching staff in what they have at the minute.
Okay, backhanded compliment to go from Enda there. Villa against Leicester, 4:30, live on Sky Sports and OTB on Sunday. The final fixture we're talking about is Everton against Arsenal at 8:00 on Monday. It's all going Pete Tong for Rafa Benitez at the moment. It's going wrong when Seamus Coleman is so reliable, he's making a mistake in the derby. How do you dig yourself out of this, Simon? What can they possibly do?
Yeah, 1 point from 18 available. Not exactly survival form either. So I just think they need to go back to basics. They obviously miss Dominic Calvert-Lewin. They miss his goals, his energy. They just don't seem to be clicking at the minute. So it's tough. They just, like I say, back to basics, back to the drawing board, be hard to beat. It's one of those, do you change the manager and hope for that bounce in results, but then is changing the manager the right thing? Because Rafa Benitez has only been in there for 4 or 5 months. So, you know, do you give him time, let him spend some money in January, hope to bring in some better players? Do they sell Calvert-Lewin or not? I don't know. But it's a tough one. I think they just need to go back to basics. It's an old cliche, but, you know, you pass to your mate and that's it. And you give an angle and then you hopefully run forward as quick as you can, but you run back even quicker. Try and stop goals going in. That's been their biggest downfall this year.
I think with Everton, it's a mixture of bad recruitment and bad management, I guess. If you're like, somebody said that moving to the new stadium will hopefully give Everton the lift, but I think it requires a lot more than that. I mean, I've said it before on the show and on previous shows, no matter who the manager seemed to be, they've still been bringing in these players who are very hot for 5 games and then just drop off for the rest of the season. And I think they've done that under Rafa as well. You name the likes of Iwobi, Damari Gray, like, on paper, good players, and on their day, really sharp and really dangerous players, but they're not going to do it for you for 38 games in a season. So it requires a much higher or much longer term plan than just, yeah, you know what, we'll get to the new stadium and then everything will be okay. It won't. You need recruitment.
I think injuries have been a big issue for them as well. Are Arsenal going to beat them, Simon? Is that what's going to happen on Monday night?
0-0 draw.
Yeah, it's funny. It's hard to believe in Arsenal after everything that we've seen since, I don't know, even the last 3 or 4 years of the Wenger era. From that point where they were a really reliable team to now, they've been up and down. But I definitely have seen signs that there's, again, an identity brewing there. And maybe if Aubameyang stops missing from 3 or 4 yards. As a striker, right? Aubameyang is obviously unbelievably classy and has an incredible career and banked, you know, massive reservoirs of, I know how to do this. But just over the last while, 1-on-1 from 5 yards, you're not backing him.
No, not at the minute. But we all go through those horrible patches, and he just needs one to come off his backside, and then all of a sudden you might see him get your sort of 10 to 15 goals that he's probably been looking for in the last few years. So, you're right in what you say in terms of the identity. It's that thing that has been missing for Arsenal for a long time since Wenger, and they seem to be doing that. Obviously, Arteta has got good grounding from Pep as well, so he's obviously trying to implement that kind of style. Smith Rowe is obviously someone who's very exciting for them. It just need, I think, again, similar. If you get rid of Aubameyang, who's obviously not producing too good numbers at the minute, or hasn't been for the last couple of years, do they go out and get a number nine and hopefully they can start being that sort of force and hopefully pushing into the top four again?
Yeah, I think it seems like, anyway, that the recruitment they did last summer is beginning to pay off for them as well. Okay, very quickly, I'm going to tell you about the Football Five-A-Side, our dream team this week. Every week on Instagram, we're going to ask you to choose your five-a-side team made up of players competing in our selected games. This week, it was Fabianski against Mendy. I mean, that's not fair. I presume it was 99-1. Craig Cathcart versus John Stones. John Stones won that one. Was that close?
I think it was close enough. Right. It was closer than you would expect for Cathcart against Jones. Or Stones, rather.
Bruno Fernandes versus Conor Gallagher. And Bruno won that. Now,
just about.
Yeah, that one was very
close.
How
far he's fallen in people's estimations over the last 4 weeks.
He was good last night. You know, I think Bruno is one of those, needs a bit of love. Richarlison versus Aubameyang. Aubameyang won that. All right. That's. I think people are sleeping on Richarlison again. Ollie Watkins versus Jamie Vardy. Vardy missed the winner. Yeah, was that midweek? No, they won midweek. It was last weekend he missed the winner.
Yeah. I'll tell you one of my foibles really quick on Fantasy Premier League. I changed my captain, and I thought I had changed it to Salah, who I was delighted. He scored 2 goals and got an assist. It wasn't him. I actually took it off Ronaldo, scored 2 goals, and, you know, no, so it wasn't him. It was Jamie Vardy.
Oh, okay. Missed clean through 1-on-1 to win the game. Right, a couple of quick comments. Unless Ranić does poorly, the only person he's going to put forward as new manager in the summer is himself. He's basically said that in his first presser now, which is kind of true. It's not like, who would you recommend? Well, me, obviously. But after me, if it's not me, who would you recommend? Oh, one of my mates. And Kieran O'Doherty says, Leicester must be very keen to get games in the Christmas period when they're playing Villa on Sunday and Everton the next day on Monday Night Football. Is that a mistake?
Fault, yeah.
Okay, good man, Enda. Thanks for that.
11:30 last night was not the best time to put together that graphic.
At least we put it up. We fixed that one for you. Right. The football kickoff with Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports. Simon, good stuff. Enjoy the games this weekend. Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Take care.
We'll see you all next week. Take care.
The football kickoff
with Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.